B-Pod Studios.
This is not your conventional sports radio show.
It's become painfully clear.
Toucher and Rich, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Around the NFL in 15 minutes.
You play to win the game.
All right, we're not going Feinbaum here, huh? All right. You know we got some
Feinbaum?
You know we got some Feinbaum stock.
You know what? Sure, let's go Feinbaum. I had no idea it was ready to go.
All right. Mike Lockhart, is this all one clip? The first guy is breaking down the national. Now, Paul Feinbaum, if you don't know, is a nationally syndicated radio host. Well, the reason you might not know him is that he's syndicated in places that you never go. He's syndicated in really, really bad hick towns. And what he does is he talks about college athletics, which means he talks about football. And so he has a crew of people. We've heard from women that have slept with Bear Bryant. We've heard from all kinds of people. People in the ambulance going to get operated on, talking to Paul Feinbaum while having a heart attack. Here is Paul Feinbaum.
Hey, Paul. Man, I love you.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how they all start.
All right. So the national championship game is tonight, as you can see, the Jets' newest quarterback, Justin Fields, this evening, and prepare for him. All right, here we go. Here is this is from the Paul Feinbaum show.
Who was up first? Hey, Carlos, thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Paul.
Hey there.
Yeah, my first time caller, Paul. And I got a comment about the national championship game Monday.
Okay.
You know, they shouldn't label this as no national championship game. This should be a college world Super Bowl. We're going to start with Devontae Smith. He reminds me.
Yes, College World Super Bowl. That would be a lot better. That's, I mean, the national championship game, it doesn't build it up nearly enough.
We're going to start with Devontae Smith. He reminds me of Lynn Swann.
Oh, does he? Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And Matt Jones, he reminds me of Terry Bradshaw. And Ohio State, Justin Fields. Man, he slanged that ball like Johnny Unitas. And that's my comment, Paul, and I thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. That was nice. He slings it like the old guys.
All right.
Justin Fields is the new Johnny U.
I guess so. All right. So this gentleman seems... So I couldn't tell by the beginning. Does he think this is bigger than the national championship? Because the word, the term he used was like the Super Bowl of the world.
No, it was all unintelligible. You couldn't really understand what he was saying. But this next person that calls in, Rich, may be under the influence, which is not... foreign to the callers of the Paul Feinbaum show.
Okay, all right.
Well, thank you, Carlos. You be well. You take care of yourself. Mickey is up next. Hey, Mickey. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey there, Mickey. Go right ahead.
Hey, Mr. Feinbaum. I just wanted to make a statement. But people, when they call, they don't call you about... This is not about football. This is about Mr. Paul Feinbaum. Now, who could step in your place and do what you do? Nobody could do it. Nobody.
This is someone coming up to Paul Feinbaum on the street. This is Paul Feinbaum's life.
Yeah.
No one can do that. Now, listen to me. Listen, you're not hearing me.
This guy has definitely at one time yelled, I play cards with the sheriff. The law's on my side.
That's right. You sling blade.
It's 2:45 in the afternoon, this phone call.
Yeah, these guys are so drunk. And you have to remember, they're on Central Time, so it's even earlier.
I'm sorry, 1:45 in the afternoon.
Because they're all in, like, Alabama and stuff.
That's a good point.
Sure. We're getting the band back together, honey.
Yeah, they're all in Alabama. Yeah. So, yeah, these guys start drinking at, like, 7 in the morning. This is a light snack for them.
And you don't think that? Okay, let me make a statement.
Please.
I made this up. A man that is truly great, don't think he's great, But you are great. All right, I know it's about football and all that, but I don't care about that. I care about you. And you may think I'm some kind of dumb SOB. All right, but let me tell you something, son. But do you know that what opinions, you never heard this, opinions is a rectum. It's like a rectum.
Opinions is a rectum.
Now, you've never heard this.
That shirt. That's opinions is a rectum.
Now, hang on. You ain't never heard this before.
I'd buy that in a second.
You know the thing the poop comes out of? That there, Paul, is called a rectum.
I mean, I know where he's trying to go with this, but it's never been said as eloquently as opinions is a rectum.
Yeah. Opinions are like rectums. They're sphincters.
Feinbaum's the best. He says nothing.
No.
Feinbaum knows exactly what to do.
Yeah, Feinbaum's just like, I'm not participating in this call. Because he's used to it. This is him on an airplane. This is him on a train. This is him anywhere he goes. This is what happens to Paul Feinbaum.
And boy, and you get a lot of rectums on your calls. I appreciate you, but nobody gives you consideration.
Don't give you consideration. I collect rectum. And let me tell you, I have the largest collection of rectums in all of the Southeast. I keep them in formaldehydes. Chicken rectums. Goose rectums. I got them all.
I'm repeating myself. But how many people will come on TV? And I know, fine. But you have to have respect. You deserve respect. And how that you can stand up to people and talk to them, I couldn't do it.
No kidding.
You could stand up. I think that's all.
I'm not going to use a bad word, but no, sir. Paul Feinbaum, I know, I don't know you, never met you, but I call you Mr. Mr. Fine. You are a great man. You don't realize it. People that are great don't realize it. And you can cut me off anytime you want to. But I
that's the thing, is that Feinbaum's genius is that he knows that this guy's going to peter out on his own. And the guys, even like, it's the people that got into the Capitol. They kind of got in and started looking around like, all right, now what? Like, this guy, like, he's been going for over a minute, and he's kind of looking around like, someone going to pull the parachute?
Yeah. I think he said that to the bartender a few times. You can cut me off whenever you want.
Yeah, I mean, you just keep putting him in front of me. I mean, this could end. This is a civil agreement between the two of us. This could end at any time. Now, you're probably going to cut me off, hopefully. My God, I didn't, kind of going around in circles here.
That's the new TNR shirt. Opinions is a rectum. On the back it says, a lot of rectums on your calls.
Yeah. A lot of rectums on your calls. Boy, boy, boy.
You can cut me off anytime you want to, but I just want to tell you how much I appreciate you and what you do. And nobody can beat you. Nobody can. And I want people to call and, when they call and say, hey, this is that Alabama-Georgia game. I don't like Georgia. I like Alabama. Well, to hell with that. But nobody paid you that.
Yeah, he was like, I didn't know I was going to have to be breathing this long.
Do you think he fell asleep for a split second and woke himself back up?
That is a theory. I think more just the... He didn't think he'd be exerting this kind of effort at 1:30 in the afternoon. This is coming out of nowhere.
But nobody paid you that. But I do.
Mickey, thank you. Thank you so much. And you be well. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Okay. I mean, that's I mean, that is a...
It was a pleasure to talk to him.
God, I get jealous. You know what? That was like, think about how amazing it would be to do radio that was broadcast into those areas of the world. You just answer the phone and you would have that just every single day.
He didn't have to do anything. He didn't have to drag it out of him. He didn't have to do anything. He just had to press the phone and say hello.
Yep, and not screw it up. And that's the, and by the way, 90% of the people who took that call would screw it up.
They'd be all concerned about it getting uncomfortable. They'd be all concerned about filling dead air. They'd be all concerned about him repeating himself. And instead, he just lets it ride.
Opinions is a rectum.
Yep, opinions is a rectum.
Yep.
Hell with that. But nobody pays you that.
He not, I'm telling you, that was a split second of being out. Like he fell asleep.
That's a good point.
Like, you've had conversations with people at bars before, like late at night, and you know that while you've been talking, like they've like fallen asleep in like mid discussion. That's it. That's 4 a.m. You've ordered pancakes because you've been out all night, and that's the guy who almost falls into his food right there. I mean, listen to that. That is, his head is about
hell
to hit.
That. Nobody
pays
you that.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Of course they don't pay any of that.
Hell with that.
98.5, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. And for years we've had Manish Mehta on. Reporter, covered the Jets for the Daily News. And we loved him because we loved having him on because he would he was... either in his, needling of the Patriot fans or his absolute
disdain for the Jets.
Or just, I wouldn't say that, but his when he went after Gase, it was very fun.
Yeah, not the Jets in general, but especially
for
this past
people,
year.
Certain people.
I mean, listen, you know, watching him this year cover the Jets was kind of wild because it was just so dysfunctional what was going on there. And Manish was covering all of that. And, of course, you know, in all the years where there was, you know, Tom Brady's dominance, he'd throw out an article that would, of course, rile people up. And I kind of like people who do that. I enjoy Manish whenever we have him on. But this has been a very strange year.
From Manish Mehta. It is indeed Manish Mehta, not working at the Daily News as we speak right now, and he joins us. He has not talked about this publicly, but through Bert Breer, mutual friend, here he is, Manish Mehta on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Manish, hello.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We are well, and let me tell you like what we had heard about you, because and I think this would be interesting to just fans of football in general, because it kind of shows you how teams work. Now, what we had heard is that you had been removed from the Jet press conferences because, among other things, you had stalked Joe Douglas's child, his 10-year-old child. You had gone to one of his Little League games and then texted Joe Douglas out of the blue and said, listen, I'm here at a your son's Little League game, and the Jets took that as being threatening. And then we heard that you...
Can we just do one thing at a time?
No, I want to because I know how this is going to go. So I kind of want to give a blanket of what we had heard, and then Manish can go through all his things. And then we had heard that, among other things, that you had been removed from all their press conferences because of your behavior, and you had other people doing all your work and were giving them no credit. So, Manish, that is what we had heard coming in, and it's interesting the way of telephone, how that goes. Kind of give us a background about the reality of your time with the Daily News and your relationship with the Jets.
Well, I've covered had covered the Jets for 11 years. Most recently, in recent years specifically, I should say, the Jets have been very sensitive to criticism. So they went to these extraordinary lengths to try to remove me from the beat because I found out, as you said earlier, you know, a lot of their dysfunctional inner workings. And no team should be able to get away with this. You should not be able to, suppress a journalist by smearing their reputation with distortions and embellishments and sometimes just flat-out fabrications just because you don't like what they are reporting and writing, and that's exactly what happened here. And the NFL, frankly, took the Jets' word for it without ever talking to me or my editors about whether any of those claims were true. And you mentioned a couple things just on the surface, guys. So fundamentally, this is wrong. It sets a very dangerous precedent. They used three main examples to try to remove me. They had tried to remove me last year and restrict my access, and they were told that if they tried to restrict my access because they don't like the tone and the coverage of my writing, that they would come across very poorly. So they backed off, and they tried a different path this summer. The backbone of their case, the centerpiece of their case, was this innocuous interaction I had with Joe Douglas' son in July of 2019 when I was at a Phillies game.
General manager of the Jets. By the way, general manager of the Jets is Joe Douglas. Go ahead, Manish.
Right. And I cover the Jets, but I live outside of Philadelphia. So I went to a Phillies game with two friends in July of 2019, about a month after Joe Douglas was hired as the general manager. I happened to be in the same concession line with Joe Douglas' son and a friend of his. They were ahead of us in line. They got ice cream. They went to get napkins. We were probably about 10 or 15 feet away. I was still in line. He was, outside of line. And the only reason I know what Joe Douglas' kid looks like is that literally the day before I watched an in-house Jet video on their show called One Jet's Drive that featured Joe Douglas and his family right after he got hired. So I turned to my buddy when I was in line. I said, hey, I think that's Joe Douglas' kid. And he was wearing a Phillies jersey. I think it may have actually said Douglas on the back. I don't remember. But in any case, we made eye contact when he turned around. We were about 10 or 15 feet away. I said, is Joe Douglas your dad? He said, yeah. I said, cool. And then he and his friend walked away. We stayed in line. We got our food. And that was it. It was such a weird and funny coincidence that I texted Joe, because Joe and I had been texting for the month prior. Right after he got the job, we were texting. I wished him good luck. He initially apologized to me for not getting back to me. And then I made a joke and said, hey, look, I'm going to Switzerland on vacation. Do me a favor. Don't trade Sam Darnold while you're out of the country. And he said, you don't have to worry about that. I look forward to getting to know you and the other people who cover the team. And, we'll touch base when you get back. The Jets, however, framed that incident and said that Joe Douglas got a strange text out of nowhere from an unknown number saying that, hey, I just saw your son at a baseball game, as if I was monitoring his son in some way. I don't quite understand it.
Right. And the way that was – so when that comes up, it sounds like – and we talked about this, Manish, in all disclosure. I talked to Manish over the weekend. And the thing is that it sounds like, to what end? It makes you sound insane. Because, all right, yeah, you saw my kid. And by the way, this, just to give you an example, the game of telephone that goes on, by the time it got to us, it was Manish was at his kid's, Joe Douglas' kid's Little League game, which the Jets never even said happened.
So I just stop for a second? Yeah. If I'm Joe Douglas, though, in fairness, and I get a text from someone who I kind of know, you're not like best buddies, and they said, I talked to your kid in line at a baseball game. Don't you understand how that's weird?
Well, this is what I'll say about that. I didn't actually have any kind of real conversation. I amounted to what was a hi. The conversation literally lasted 5 seconds. I subsequently talked to Joe in person in the preseason, during the season, and he and I texted the following entire offseason. At no point did Joe ever say anything to me about it. If he was concerned in any way, he didn't express that to me because there's really nothing to be concerned about. It was a non-issue. I had not even thought about that until July, this past July, when I found out that my credentials were taken away and they used this as the centerpiece. Joe and I had many pleasant conversations in person and via text in the year since that game, and at no point did he ever mention anything to me because, again, it was a non-issue.
Yeah, that's the
thing. I guess it's just weird. And listen, I could see it being completely innocuous, but I also can understand. Texting somebody and saying, "Hey, I talked to your kid," especially when he's 11. There was nothing inside of you that before you pressed send that went, maybe that's just weird. Maybe that's going to come across as being strange.
Well, I'll put it this way. If you had interacted with somebody prior to it many times you wouldn't think it was weird. I didn't for one second think it was.
But you didn't. You've never been introduced to his kid. You know what I mean?
No, but Rich,
that's another
kid,
reason
if,
why it's odd.
But
I'm not saying he did anything wrong.
No,
I'm
but
just
no,
saying
but in the
that
year,
there's
got
to be something inside that goes,
but
maybe
then,
this feels
well,
a little
you,
off.
You and I are in different camps. I mean, if Dan Roach said, hey, I saw your kid, my daughter,
Dan
who's
Roach
never met,
is like, we've hung out before.
All right,
we've gone out to dinner. I mean,
say,
it's
a, who do I kind of know? Greg Hill said, hey, I saw your daughter Zoe at the Red Sox game. I would say, okay. And then especially, and I don't know Greg Hill even as well as Joe Douglas and Manish knew each other. And if, you know, and then certainly if I talk to Greg Hill, you know, every couple, you know, if I talk to Greg Hill after that, I mean, that wouldn't rub me. See, when Manish told me it, that doesn't rub me at all as being strange. And also, the thing is, like, what end? To what end?
Once again, I don't think you did anything wrong, Manish. I just think there's something inside of me that
Rich,
before I press send, I'd be like, this is a little
but
weird.
But, Rich, in your opinion, if you got that text, like, what would that person be saying to you? I mean, you don't have an adversarial relationship. Like what
I don't
would
know. I mean, he is someone who's critical of the team and him. Like, I mean,
no,
yeah,
wait,
but
wait,
at that point,
right.
But that's not even the problem with it. It could be anybody. It's just there's a weirdness to that. But you have to admit that, even though I don't think you did anything wrong.
The randomness of seeing them at a professional baseball game, if I've been texting to someone, I don't know. That wouldn't. That
someone
wouldn't,
you've never met, and like, I know your kid, I know who he is.
No, Joe and I had
hello.
Met. No, hang on a second. Joe and I had met.
Yeah, they had met.
No. You have never met his kid.
Yeah, but that's
right.
Why it's interesting.
Yeah, well, look. The interaction literally took like 5 seconds, and it was not a conversation, and I was in line, and he was not in line. Regardless of that, the overall point is that the Jets told me last year, their public relations director, Eric Gelfand, who spent a decade working for James Dolan and the Knicks, told me last year they did not like the tone and the style of my writing, and once that pathway was closed to get me off covering the team, they tried a different way. And the only way that they figured could get me off the beat was to concoct a litany of really distortions.
Well, we certainly
it does
agree.
Sound like it was spun to be more sinister.
No,
than
we
it was,
certainly
no
all
question.
We certainly, Rich, you would agree that losing your credentials and not being able to cover the team because you said, "Hey, I saw your kid at a Phillies game," is a little.
Oh, I agree
ridiculous.
With that. As I said, I don't think he did anything wrong.
No, we're talking weird. About a guy who's. The team has been trying to force out of his job. And, I mean, we're talking about, let's be honest, an innocuous thing.
No, I agree. And there's you know, it's wild, Manish, because now it's funny. It almost seems like this article that came out gave people permission to start piling on. And, you know, whether or not, you know, and people started coming out from all over the place. And one of them was, you know, Nick Folk's wife said that I guess you had threatened her with bad press or her husband with bad press if she did not withdraw something negative she'd said about you on Twitter. What is your response to that? Because that was also part of this article.
Right. I will address that momentarily. But there is another interaction that I had with Joe Douglas, which I think kind of speaks to why Joe Douglas would kind of go along with this whole story about his son when it actually didn't occur the way the Jets framed it to the NFL. I saw Joe Douglas in January of 2020 at the Senior Bowl. Anyone who's been to the Senior Bowl knows that after Senior Bowl practice, that parking lot, the one parking lot, is flooded with general managers and coaches and scouts and reporters. I had a conversation with Joe in which basically I expressed to him the importance of having an open line of communication. Completely random conversation. I was talking with an agent friend of mine when Joe walked by. We spoke. Joe and I spoke for 15 or so minutes. He told me during that conversation, because I said, look, having an open kind of line of communication is fair to both you and me. I never want to write a story in which Joe comes back after I've written the story and says, hey, Manish, this is unfair, it's wrong, this is not how I feel, you misrepresented my position. So having an open line of communication to get background on information is standard for any good, thorough reporter. That was the conversation I had with Joe Douglas. The conversation that was portrayed to the NFL was that I told Joe Douglas, if he doesn't talk to me, I'm going to write negative things about him for as long as he's a general manager. Completely untrue. In fact, 3 months later, I wrote this glowing story about Joe Douglas and his draft philosophy and his draft grading scale. Because I kind of write wherever the reporting takes me. If it puts somebody in a favorable light, so be it. If not, so be it. But what I thought was eye-opening and what kind of resonates with me from that conversation was that Joe told me point blank that he did not want to get fired for cause. Fired for cause was the exact phrasing that he used for being seen with me in public. I thought he was being extremely paranoid, but he said to me that Joey Vitt, who is the son of assistant coach Joe Vitt, Joe Vitt is Adam Gase's father-in-law. Joey Vitt apparently walked by us, among the hundreds of people that walked by us during this conversation, and Joe Douglas was so afraid that Joey Vitt was going to tell his father that he saw us, and then Joe Vitt was going to tell Adam Gase that he saw us, and then Adam Gase was going to tell Christopher Johnson, who's the acting owner, that he saw us talking, and then Joe Douglas would get fired because of all that. So that was the level of paranoia that Joe was feeling at the time. So I think that clearly speaks to why he would kind of go along with this charade and tell other people in the organization that he felt threatened by this interaction I had with his son. Which he
why not sue the Jets
did.
Then? Then why not sue the Jets?
Well, the Jets are a multi-billion-dollar organization. And, guys, this is not obviously something I haven't thought of. The Jets are a multi-billion-dollar organization. The Jets have not made any of this public strategically, I think. What they have done is they have had, I know for a fact, that their public relations head, who I'd mentioned earlier, Eric Gelfand, he had told at least one other reporter covering the team that, hey, Manish got his credential revoked. It has nothing to do with his reporting. Here are the reasons why. So, you know, you leak mischaracterizations to one person, knowing full well that reporters like to gossip. And then that's how information spreads. So people who were covering the team thought they had an idea of why I wasn't given a credential, when the reality is that they have no idea why. They just know the two or three mischaracterizations that the public relations had told one reporter.
Okay. Yeah, I know if someone was alleging that I was doing something that doesn't make me look that good, that's I would be thinking lawsuit. I understand going up against a conglomerate, just a massive juggernaut like the Jets.
Or also wanting to cover a team again, and if you're the guy that sued the team, you know.
I mean, that's
right. Then you become litigious, and that's not something that anybody wants to, you know. Hey, look, the bottom line is that the reason that we didn't make this public, because my bosses at the Daily News wanted to make this public, as I explained to the Pro Football Writers Association president and my editors, the perception is reality. And I did not want to be attached to this story about his son. So the Jets knew exactly what they were doing. They knew exactly what they were doing when they made that the jumping off point to their position to the NFL. And I did not, you know, I thought it was especially egregious that they would invoke a child after a harmless interaction and spin it and twist it in a way to essentially, you know, get me off covering the team. And so, it's, look, you guys know this was a strange year covering the NFL. There was no locker room access. So
yeah.
I talked to the PFWA. I talked to my editors. And I said, look, I have enough sources and contacts in the organization and across the league. I can do my job extremely well without being on Zoom calls for a few months. And I think if you look at the past year with all the stories that I broke, it's obvious that you don't need to be on Zoom calls to cover a team. And just one last thing before I address the Nick Faulk situation. They revoked the credential about a week after I wrote a pretty blistering story after talking to Jamal Adams, in which Jamal Adams was extremely critical of Adam Gase, and that didn't sit well with people in the organization. So in terms of Nick Faulk, I like Nick Faulk. Nick Faulk and I have never had a crossword. This was back in 2016, in which I wrote a story that wasn't even about Nick Faulk. It was after a Sunday or Monday night game against, I believe, the Seahawks and the Cardinals, in which it ended in a tie, I think, and the kickers missed like five or six total field goals. And it was just a story about how the NFL should consider not having kickers and just not having field goals. And his wife took exception to that. And you can look at tweets online. This was, again, about 5 years ago. She tweeted something. She took an unprovoked shot at me, and I said, look, I understand. This is a player's wife. She's defending her son. Defending her husband, who's also a kicker. I think it's misguided, and I have nothing bad to say about Nick Faulk. And at no point did I ever threaten Nick Faulk or his wife about bad coverage. I don't do that. As I said earlier, My entire career has been built on relationships and trust with people in the NFL. That's the reason I get information. I don't get information by threatening anybody, and I have never threatened anyone to get information. That's not how I operate. I operate on mutual trust, and at no point did I ever say I would write critical things about Nick Folk if his wife continued tweeting defending her husband. That never happened.
Well, just while we're clearing up stuff, because this is great, we're hearing your side, because as you said, this has all been one-sided. I mean, all we're hearing is what other people are saying. So while you're here clearing things up, what about the Charles McDonald situation? He was the writer who is complained about how when he was covering the team in your stead, there were articles that were written, yet he got no credit for it, and he went off. He was pissed off that it was your name, your face under the, it was at the byline there, but it was his reporting. How do you respond to that?
I've covered the league for, you know, in some form or fashion for 15 years. I've covered the Jets for 11 years. I am a pretty well-sourced reporter inside that organization, even to this day. I was texting two people in the organization this morning. And Charles McDonald and I worked together for about 4 weeks closely. Mm-hmm. 3 weeks in training camp, the first week of the season. Starting from the second game of the season until he left about two and a half months later, somewhere in that neighborhood, he and I worked independently. I didn't communicate with him in any form or fashion. He did not cover the New York Jets with me this season outside of 3 weeks in training camp and the first week of the season. He was evidently not happy with doing junior-level work. You know, he's a junior-level reporter, and essentially, the way he helped me or aided me during the 3 weeks of camp mainly was giving me access to Zoom calls. He would occasionally forward me emails from the Jets public relations distribution list on a couple occasions, specifically the Joe Douglas press conference, because he only speaks once before the season. I outlined two or three questions that I wanted asked. Now, Adam Gase speaks regularly. Sam Darnold speaks regularly. There was a couple occasions when I said, hey, can you ask Gase about this or about or Darnold about that? But for the most part, I didn't really ask him to ask any questions on my behalf because they were, you know, normal questions, obvious questions that other reporters were going to ask. And that was the extent of the relationship. We worked independently again after that first week of the season, before the second game of the season. And, you know, how people choose to respond after they leave a company, I think, reflects a lot on who that person is. But again, my extent of my relationship with that person was exactly what I described. I have never used reporting from other people and pawned it off as my own. Frankly, you know, I'm insulted by that notion. I have enough sources in that organization, as evidenced by me reporting that the Jets had secret cameras in their locker room this year, and that the Jets were the only team in the NFL to not have in-person meetings throughout training camp because Adam Gase does not like meetings, and that Le'Veon Bell was on the verge was on the trading block, and that the Jets traded Avery Williamson to the Steelers. I broke all of that information because I have good sources and contacts in the organization. I do not need a junior level reporter to give me anything. And I did not use any information, any proprietary information or exclusive information from him or any other colleague of mine in any column that I wrote. Everything that I wrote was from information that I got from my contacts and sources in the organization and information that was publicly provided on transcripts that the Jets put on their team website.
So he's lying, is what you're saying, because I mean, he put out there that those were his camp observations and they didn't get attributed to him. And he also posted, you know, the questions that you emailed him to ask, which you mentioned, of course. So you're saying he's lying about all of that.
I'm saying that I never used any information that he or anybody else provided, any exclusive proprietary information in my story. And if I ever would do that, and obviously we've had shared bylines, not we meaning me and him, but me and other reporters at the Daily News, if they're shared bylines, it's pretty obvious, you know, that you guys work in tandem in some form or fashion. In the 3 weeks of training camp and the 1 week of the regular season that I worked with this person, he never provided me with any information that I used without giving him any credit. That is not true.
Completely okay, so false. Jenny Ferentes of Sports Illustrated said in this report as well that that apparently they said you had become unhinged after she asked you not to barge in a one-on-one interview. She said, quote, Afterward, in a hallway outside the media room, Mehta screamed at her, according to multiple people who were there, cursing repeatedly, F you, F you, F you. This tirade lasted several minutes, these people said, and two other writers had to calm Mehta down. Did that happen?
Nobody calmed me down. What I will say, guys, that conversation took place for a couple minutes, I believe 9 years ago. Okay. And I am not going to say that things didn't get heated on the beat. There were a couple occasions in the 11 years that I covered the team where I let my emotions get the best of me, and I do regret that. I don't intend to upset anybody. That particular reporter and I had a friendship prior to covering the beat. That lasted a couple minutes. It was 9 years ago. I think the way you described that conversation isn't accurate necessarily, but
that's the way the article described it.
What I will say that the overall theme is correct, and that was 9 years ago. It was a couple minutes. It's a competitive beat, and I think it's frankly unrealistic to think that you're not going to have disagreements with reporters on the beat in a competitive environment over the course of a decade. But I do want to clearly say that I have respected the locker room bounds when it comes to one-on-ones. There's an unwritten rule, and I'm sure it's like this with the Patriots beat and beats across the country. When you're in the locker room, you do respect reporters when they're talking one-on-one. Sometimes it's unavoidable because you're talking to a player in an adjacent locker and you're next to somebody. But I do my best, and I've always done my best to respect the bounds and give people enough space, if possible, when discussing one-on-ones. And I've never eavesdropped on any kind of conversation in my career. That's not how I do my business. I do my business, again, by doing my own reporting. And I think that I've done an exceptional job in terms of putting forth the effort and the man hours it takes to be on a competitive beat like the Jets.
All right. Well, Manish Mehta, listen, you looking for a job right now? What's the deal?
Well, like I said earlier, look, I've covered the NFL for about 15 years, and I am interested in covering the NFL moving forward as well.
All right. Well, I say give Manish a job. I like Manish's writing, and
I love Manish's writing. I mean, the guy breaks big stories,
I like
big
Manish.
Stories.
And so, you were not at a Little League game. That is good to know.
I was not at anybody's Little League game. It is funny, Fred, when you mentioned that particular version. I had heard that version, and once you get in a scenario like this where people can say whatever they want, whenever they want, publicly, you put yourself in a precarious position. But I think the overall theme is that an NFL team, an NBA team, Major League Baseball, NHL team, no team should be able to get away with suppressing a reporter and attempting to smear their reputation with these distortions and fabrications just because you don't like what they're reporting.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Manish, we appreciate the time, and thank you so much. Please be in contact. And Manish is a damn good reporter, and we appreciate you coming on. Thanks,
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Manish. Appreciate it.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Coming up next at 10, Sports Talk. While you're on the clock, Solak and Bertrand.
I like this.
Right now.
This to me is fun.
It's Tusher and Rich.
What is happening right at this moment.
On Boston's Home for Sports.
People either hating me or liking me.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
We just had Manish Mehta on. One of the things that the Jets said he did was text Joe Douglas that he saw his kid at a Phillies game. It said that it was an innocuous conversation, and they turned it into something else. Curtis, go ahead.
Gentlemen, believe it or not, I'm actually more miserable than Fred, and typically I align with him 99% of the time. But this time, it's like, no. Something's wrong with Manish Mehta, bottom line, because if he doesn't have something in his body or in his mind that says, don't send that text, then he's just patently, something's wrong. I mean, first off, he doesn't have the frame of reference, the Douglas guy, the father, that he, Manish, by his own admission, said he had just watched a video the day before, and that's coincidentally how he knew the kid. Now, the father has no frame of reference of that. So as far as he's concerned, he doesn't know, Manish knows what his child actually looks like. So to receive a phone call about your 11-year-old child that, you know, that it's just weird, man. It's,
all right, but a year.
Just real quick, one more. Friend. You said, to what end? Now, okay, then flip that on the other side. The other side of that coin is, Manish, to what end? What was his end?
I think he was trying to further their friendship, and it was an excuse to text him.
Well, I think you got to find better excuses than an 11-year-old.
No,
he said they were wrong to use the 11-year-old. So then he's right to use the 11-year-old.
Well, they changed the scenario. They said that it was like in a threatening way. And Manish's point was he had a year's worth of conversations with Joe Douglas following that. So, I mean, on its whole,
I think the Jets are wrong. I'm just talking specifically the involving an 11-year-old. There is no scenario that involves adults that it is ever acceptable to involve an 11-year-old. None. You cannot tell one scenario that that's a good or reasonable, smart thing to do. You just don't involve an 11-year-old.
I don't know. If I was texting with Danny Ainge and Danny said, I saw your son at a Red Sox game, it wouldn't freak me out.
But
there is a bit of an adversarial relationship, so it's kind of apples and oranges.
But that could be adversarial. I mean, if I was crap, all right, then the Bruins have gotten mad at me. If Matt Chmura, he's going to hate him using his name, but Matt Chmura, who texted me and said, I saw Milo at a Red Sox game, I wouldn't. It does for me personally. It doesn't resonate like that. It truly doesn't.
Well, here's the only thing, Fred, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but I mean, you know, I don't think he did anything wrong, but I'm also don't think I'm ever going to open up a conversation with an 11-year-old that I don't know personally. That's weird. Like if there's just a kid standing in front of your line who's 11 who's not with an adult, there's just to be something inside you that goes, maybe I don't talk to this kid.
Man.
You know what I mean? That was the only thing that was weird about it. Once again, Manish, I don't think, did anything wrong.
Right.
But there's got to be something inside of you that says there's a couple different plays here where people might think this was odd. Man. One, talking to the 11-year-old, and two, sending the text saying that you talked to someone's 11-year-old that you have not been introduced to.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, I mean, we're also looking at it through a microscope. So, but I mean, listen, my opinion is not necessarily the right opinion. I don't know. But it wouldn't. If Danny Ainge texted me or Matt Chmura texted me, I wouldn't think anything of it.
And do I believe the Jets more than likely blew it up into something that it wasn't?
Well, they definitely did.
I believe that. Now, that I believe.
No, they definitely did.
And I think that it shouldn't have obviously cost Manish Mehta his job, which is a little weird. That's it. A little weird.
Sure. But it was made into something like villainous, which is, unless he's a cold, calculated maniac. I talked to him about it. I mean, it's what was he going to do? Like, I mean,
not talk to him.
No. I'm saying like, but I know we have to break, but this is a weird hour. So, but say like, what's he going to say? Like, I'm going to kidnap your kid or something. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, maybe it was weird. I don't think it was, but maybe it was, but to what end? Like, what if Joe Douglas now thinks that Manish is going to kidnap his kid or something? I mean, ridiculous. I mean, he's not a felon. He's not a psychopath. All right, we'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.